Goodness me, 5 years ago nearly it is, when Daybreak revealed the chaotic aftermath of the earthquake that ripped through Kaikoura 5 years ago. Andrew Spencer did what came naturally to him. He grabbed his camera. The 7.8 magnitude quake hit just after midnight on November 14th and ruptured along 20 faults, the most on record. It caused extensive ground uplift, triggering the biggest local source tsunami since 1947 and massive landslides. The town was cut off, stranding locals and tourists, thousands of them alike. Andrew roamed the town and his photos became a day-to-day record of what was happening. To mark the 5th anniversary of the quake this month, the photos have been compiled into a book simply entitled Remembering Kaikoura Earthquake. Andrew's with us now from the town. Morena, welcome.
Hello, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
5 years since this enormous event. And the reason now for you to put this work into a book?
Well, it was talked about right from the start, actually, from when I was wandering around the town with my camera and people I know well said, oh, this will have to be a book, won't it? And it never became a book. I didn't even look at the photos again until this year, approaching the 5th anniversary. My friend at the Paper Plus here, Mark Fissenden, he's kind of kicked me up the bum all the way through, and this year he said, well, we're doing it this year because it's 5 years. So I delved into the photos, and first time I'd looked at them, really, since I made them.
What's that like 5 years on to take yourself back visually and undoubtedly emotionally to what happened?
Yeah, there was definitely a few lumps in the throat and a lot of memories. Two or three of the people have passed away. You know, there's a lot happened in 5 years. There's a little boy eating an ice cream. He's a young man now. He's a big strapping lad. There's people that have left town. A lot's happened.
What was your life there the day before, Andrew? As we said, you're seldom without your camera. What was the daily routine for you?
The day before the earthquake, you mean, Catherine?
Yeah, at that time.
Just a normal day. It was really busy in Kaikoura because it was Canterbury show weekend, so people had been away for the weekend, were travelling back to Canterbury. It was just a good day. My wife works in Blenheim, and she was home for the weekends. We always joke we got the perfect marriage, living the week apart. So we make the most of the weekends together. It was just a normal day, really. Yeah, just a relaxing Sunday.
And your experience of that profound, profound uplifting of the earthquake itself?
Yeah, pretty. We're in the deepest of sleep just after midnight, snuggled up in bed, and the noise and the... I actually had a flashback. I was in the Anangahua earthquake when I was a young fella, and I did have a little bit of a recall in my brain of what was going on. I knew it was an earthquake straight away. I didn't think it was something driving through the side of the house. But just the force of it, you really couldn't get out of bed, and the noise was just overwhelming, really.
Your first thought, of course, is always for neighbours and for your own loved ones. So just explain a little how that night and the next morning happened.
Yeah, so along with my wife being home, our eldest daughter was on study leave, so she was home, and the dog was in the house. So made sure they were all safe. The dog had actually ended up somehow downstairs, and she was jammed up the side of the spare bed down there. She must have thought that was a good place to be. We went and checked all the neighbours. There's quite a few elderly people around here, but they're pretty robust. They were all in good spirits, and there was no problem. So once we made sure everyone was okay around here, we tried to find somewhere to sleep. We jumped in our bed. That didn't work, so we got in the car for a couple of hours, but that didn't really work either because the dog, you know what dogs are like. And so we ended up back in the house. We did have the luxury. I live quite elevated up on Deal Street, so we had the luxury of not having to worry about any impeding tsunami, or so whereas people further down on the lowland, they were all trying to find somewhere high to go. So most of them ended up around the area, actually, and up onto the peninsula.
The civil defence response swung in, the community response swung in, and you did what's your instinct. You picked up your camera. And tell me a little bit more of what you were seeing and what you were documenting.
Every morning I take my dog for a walk right on daybreak, so usually half past five, and I always take my camera, always make a picture. There's always something to make a picture of here. So that morning it was the same. We stumbled out and we made our way up towards the medical centre, which is on my street, and this is where, it became kind of Mission Central. This is where all the displaced people kind of ended up. There was hundreds of vehicles, there was tents starting to be erected by then, and there was people wandering around, I don't know, trying to make sense of what happened, I suppose. Also, it was the only communications in town. Cell phones didn't work, we didn't have any communications, we didn't have any power. So there was hundreds of people trying to catch up with family and loved ones from there. So there was pictures everywhere. There was just stuff that was so weird that it was picture-worthy. So I did that day, and then when I got some communications, I posted on Facebook, and it seemed like there was an appetite for it, and the project just carried on day.
Is it unifying to see what's happening in other parts of town, unifying at a time everyone's in such stress and distress? And does it also help people understand what's happening?
Yeah, it's incredible the skills people have under adverse conditions, I suppose. Everyone was doing their best thing, and it was incredible. So, and that prompted me to do my best thing. You know, it was kind of the best I could do. And so, yeah, it carried on from there.
People are front and centre in so many of these images, sometimes looking straight at the camera. Other times you've caught them just in quiet moments or where groups are gathering to get updates of information. People here pushing wheelbarrows. You've just caught slices of the moments of these days.
I know a lot of these people. I guess you could say people trust me in this town. They've known me for a long time, and I know just about everyone. I can get in their faces with a camera and they'll trust me. And so the close-up straight-on ones are probably a lot of local people that, you know, we have an association or we know who each other is. And the rest were more sort of candid, sneaky ones. Usually I'd make the picture before I gave the person the nod that I'd made the picture, and everyone was really cool. Everyone knew what I was trying to do.
One here of, I think, a tourist in the back of a van, lights on in the evening, reading his mobile phone. And, of course, that evacuation was a big part of the story. People, as you say, just sleeping where they could sleep.
Yeah, there was getting on for 1,200 people in town, so the priority was to get them the heck out of here because they were going to use up all our water and food, and we didn't have any. A lot of these people were, some of them didn't even have a camper van. There was a lot of tents. You'd see some tent pictures in there on the Churchill Park. Everyone was just kind of hunkered down where they could and trying to get out of town.
There's a lot of sitting and waiting, and that reminds you a lot of the situation at the time. Yes, there was a lot of frenetic activity, feeding people, supporting people, caring for people, but there's also a lot of waiting.
Yep, you can't rush Mother Nature, can you? If she decides she's going to deliver you an earthquake, she can do it in 2 minutes. But other than that, it's her time.
What of the landscape itself? And I'm looking at some extraordinary images here, including at least one taken from helicopter, because this affected people. But goodness, as we said in the introduction, the impact on Kaikoura's landscape.
Yeah, I got up in a helicopter within a week and flew south to Oaro. We were taking someone down to be evacuated, and we flew back up the coast, and that's when I got my first glimpse of the damage to the road, and that's when I realised how stuck we were and how unique this thing was. But even from our home here on Deal Street, looking across to the Seaward Kaikoura Range, there was just scarring everywhere. There was dust still billowing. There was a massive landslide up the Hapuku that created a dam, and we could see the dust constantly coming off that. The mountains were moving for days, really.
Local chopper pilots doing a lot of this work?
Yeah. There was a lot of helicopters came from out of town, but the local guys were really busy. Yeah. And they went above and beyond.
The impact on wildlife has been one of the consequential stories because, of course, this is an amazing part of the country and a habitat for some extraordinary wildlife. One of the images here you've got of dusky dolphins, I think they are. What were you seeing there?
We were worried that they may have even scarpered out of town. No one really knew how it had affected the sea life, and it was really refreshing to see the duskies when we flew down to Oaro that day. But closer in, I went up to the Waipapa uplift to make a photo for a publication. It took me like 12 hours to go up around through Marlborough. But there had been an uprise there of over 2 metres, and sitting on top of the rocks were crayfish and parwa and fish. They were just high and dry. They were like they were sitting on a sieve. It's, you know, the water had left them.
It's hard to say, isn't it? It's one of the many shocks, to mention the aftershocks, of an event like this. As you say, the sheer force of nature. But what we've learned also over these years is nature's adaptability, and the scientists have been studying, haven't they, what's happened underwater and above water to the wildlife.
Yeah. So apparently there was a huge landslide in the canyon out here, which, you know, kind of wiped out a lot of stuff. But and the parwa fishery was shut straight away because they didn't know the impact on it. And we're just about to have that open again, and you can fish with a permit at the moment. And I had my first feed of parwa just last week, actually, and the parwa were huge. They're loving it.
It's laid out day by day, and is that an important way to tell the story in some ways? You can see the community gathering in those first few days and the sort of the emergency response. Then we get to see from the air the extent of what's happened here. What do we see as these days unfold into December and beyond?
I think you see some order taking place. I think you can see people doing their best thing to contribute. You can see that we start getting some accessibility through the inland road when they get that open. Shop fronts getting, things getting fixed up a bit as best they can be. A lot of things were fixed really quick, water pipes and infrastructure, power cables, they were fixed within days. These guys were working hours and hours. And we had power back reasonably quick. And water, it came in different areas as they got it fixed, but all pretty quick, really.
The smiles here, we're well into December now, and of course much was to happen afterwards, including some epic engineering when it came to the coastal access road. But by Christmas we are seeing some smiles, and then we've got some shots from 2021, 5 years on. What's been the challenges of these 5 years for the town and its people, Andrew, and its commerce, and where are things at now?
As soon as we had some road access, they wanted a bit of us, they came to see us, and we had a good time. You know, there was lots of visitors, and it was a bit of a challenge to get here, but people tried their best to get here. But the road that we've got now is world class. It used to take an hour 40 to drive to Blenheim, and now it's an hour 20, an hour 30 on a good day if there's no trucks. But we've really been delivered some world-class infrastructure. Our water is all new. A lot of stuff's new. Most people have fixed their houses and things. There's a few historic buildings that had to be bowled, and there's a few gaps around the place. But, yeah, we're looking pretty good.
Now we've got this damn pandemic, which I know is messing with the tourism business of the district. But just getting to this anniversary date, emotionally, what do you believe the mood of the town will be?
I think everyone's we're really happy with the progress. I think we're quite happy where we're at. But yeah, this pandemic thing has thrown a bit of a curveball. Our business model is tourism in recent years, and there's not a lot of tourists. But in saying that, we've been visited by a lot of Kiwis on the weekends and that. So it's as good as we can hope for, really, I think.
There might be a good few coming in about 3 weeks' time, Andrew. and actually, what a wonderful book it is, not just around the anniversary of the earthquake, but just to remind you of the bonds of community and what happens when people pull together. Thanks for your time. Andrew Spencer.
Thank you, Catherine.
You're welcome. Andrew Spencer, photographer, and this work of his capturing the aftermath of the earthquake day by day in Kaikoura 5 years ago is now in a book, Remembering Kaikoura Earthquake. Bateman Books, the publisher.